This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. On Tuesday last week, Michigan became the 24th state in the country to adopt what are called right-to-work laws. They let workers covered by union benefits not have to pay union dues or fees. Michigan, maybe more than any other state, has been a stronghold of organized labor in this country. 50 years ago, half of Michiganders belonged to a union. Today, just 20% or so do. Marketplace's Chrissy Clark was in Flint, Michigan, not too long ago to trace organized labor's rise and slow-motion fall.
Sometimes to look forward, you've got to look back. So I went to the birthplace of the modern American labor movement. There's an actual place you can pinpoint. It's near downtown Flint, just off United Auto Workers Highway, which has more than a few cracks in it these days.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever.
My tour guide is Geraldine Blankenship, age 92, white hair in a bun, red lipstick. Long ago, she helped get unions started right here on a picket line.
Where would you picket?
In the north end, where there's no longer a building.
Geraldine's looking out the window of her Buick at what is now a giant, half-empty office park. But for most of the 20th century, it was a giant factory for GM. Geraldine's father hired in here in the early 30s, earned less than a dollar a day, and this is the kind of sentence that barely sounds real anymore, but the family was so poor, she had to walk to school barefoot in the snow.
I didn't have a pair of shoes that were decent at all. They were held together with some tape that my father had gotten at the shop.
Her dad worked 10-hour shifts with no breaks and saw men collapse from exhaustion on the assembly line. Then, one night in December of 1936, he called the house.
He said, "I got tired of being a slave. We're on strike. It's going to be a sit-down. I'll be home when it's over."
A few weeks in, Geraldine's dad called again. He sounded like he wanted to come home. Her mom had an answer for him.
She said, "If you come out, I will divorce you." She believed in strikes.
After 44 days, the strike worked. GM, the largest car company in America, signed a contract with this new union called the United Auto Workers. And eventually, the rest of the industry did, too.
Teamwork! Teamwork!
Geraldine's dad got better working conditions and better pay, and
I got a pair of ice skates for Christmas.
And in a way, those ice skates launched Geraldine and her kids and their kids on a path out of poverty.
GM Mansion, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Even if it wasn't obvious right away.
They called us shop rats.
That's Geraldine's son, Tom Blankenship. He started at GM as soon as he graduated high school in the 1960s.
Pretty much everybody understood that if you weren't college material, and a lot of us weren't.
You thought you weren't. But we didn't have the money.
Yeah, there wasn't any money for that sort of thing. And the plants were easy to hire into.
And you could make a decent living, even without a college degree, thanks to a union contract that included overtime pay, health care.
That was one of the benefits of the union. We worked our way into a middle class because of that.
By the time Tom was middle-aged, he and his wife owned a house.
Little two-bedroom house.
Two cars.
A cabin up north.
And they could afford to send their kids to college.
The nation's secret was teamwork.
But by now, we know what happened next. By the 1990s, the global economy and the way Tom and his union fit into it had changed. He and his mom have driven me across town to Tom's old plant to show me what was left behind.
Right on the corner over here is where I worked for 28 years.
Describe it for somebody who can't see it.
It's a square mile of nothing now. I didn't even realize that they were tearing it down until I drove by there on Dort Highway one day, and I realized some of the places were gone.
As the plants left to Mexico and China, or downsized because of automation, a lot of Flint crumbled. As we drive through town now, we pass miles of run-down or burnt-out buildings.
Lots of arson.
Tom points to one empty building that used to be a union hall.
If the plant's gone, there's not much use in a union hall.
What do you want to be when you grow up again?
Dad.
And what does your dad do?
He likes to go to work every day.
And what does he do at work?
Loads a robot.
Corbin Cox is the great-grandson of another of Flint's original sit-down strikers. But Corbin lives about an hour south of Flint because that's the only place his parents could find work. Keith Cox, Corbin's dad, is 42 and works as a supervisor in a car parts factory that's expanded in the last few years. He says he appreciates what unions have done for his family.
Probably got me to where I am now, but I've never been a part of one, so I don't know.
Early on, Keith tried to get a job at the union shop where his dad worked, but it was about to close. He worked at a non-union plant for years until they laid the most senior workers off to save money, he says. Now, he's just happy to have a job. And at least in his own life, Keith says unions seem kind of irrelevant.
I don't think a union's ever hurt anybody, but I just don't think they're necessary anymore.
Still, when I ask him how he feels about his grandfather and the other strikers, he gets emotional. I ask him why.
Don't really know. Probably because I'm proud of him.
Keith wants his son to be a lawyer. In Flint, Michigan, I'm Chrissy Clark for Marketplace.